This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on the 3rd of September 2010, and today I'm joined on the line by everybody's favorite guest, Bob Chapman of TheInternationalForecaster.com, the man, the myth, and the legend behind the International Forecaster newsletter, and a man who has a lot of readers in well-situated places, I think. Bob Chapman, it's extremely great to have you on the program, as always.
Well, thank you very much, and as I told you before, this is one of my very favorite programs.
Well, it is always an honor to have you on, and it's always an honor to have you on, specifically because you attract, I think, a very interesting and eclectic audience. And I know last time you talked about having a Rothschild as a subscriber, and if I heard you correctly on the Alex Jones show recently, you revealed that Fidel Castro is a subscriber to the International Forecaster. Is that right?
That's correct. In fact, they came to me about... it must be 5 or 6 years ago. And Grandma, which is their media outlet, was the one that contacted me. And of all things, I was contacted by a Canadian who was running Grandma, the service. And he said Fidel was given a copy of the Forecaster by, I think it was Chavez, he said. And he'd like to be a subscriber. I says, no problem. You know, maybe it'll make him change his ways.
Well, exactly. And recently we saw him come out and talk about Daniel Eschelin's book, and then he met with Daniel Eschelin, and he's talking about the Bilderberg Group. So extremely interesting, and who knows how much of that came directly from your influence. So it's extremely exciting.
Well, I think a lot of it did.
Well, exactly.
I think there were things that he saw that he never knew imagined. And, you know, the DGI is one of the best counterintelligence services in the world. People may not think so, but they are. They were trained by the Russians when the Soviet Union existed. And so they're very, very effective. Back at the beginning, they did have some people defect who were involved, but they still had a very, very good operation. And so he has been pretty aware of what's going on. But usually they don't get into things like this. These things are kind of like a sidecar. And, in fact, most newsletter writers won't touch it, even though they know what's going on. All they want to do is make money, and they don't care about telling people the truth.
Well, exactly. That's why a lot of people are in it, just to make a quick buck and to move on. And I think people can tell the difference between that and the work that you're doing. And that shows through, obviously, in the quality of the subscribers that you get as well. Not, of course, just Rothschilds and Castros, but people who have genuine information and are really working behind the scenes in some of the positions where people can affect change and have their ear to the ground. And on that note, I understand that you recently received some intelligence from some readers in Greece. Perhaps you could share that with the audience.
Well, I've been on radio and television and interviewed by the top newspaper in the country, and I told them what you should do is, as legally as possible, get rid of your government, because it's run by a Bilderberger who is an Illuminist. And what he's going to do is sell off everything in the country, including your islands, and take the money and give it to the bankers who should have never made the loans in the first place and made the money up out of thin air. And secondly, I would default on all the debt. I would get rid of the euro because it's too expensive for you. And institute the drachma again. And that's the English translation, drachma. I don't know how to pronounce it in Greek. And make sure it's low price so that all your goods and services will be very competitive, and you'll draw a lot of tourism and get yourself back on your feet quicker. And you must cut 30% of your governmental expenses. You'll have a depression for 4 or 5 years. It'll be over, and that'll be the end of it. But if you take all those loans and go along with Papandreou, who's your PM, you'll be buried and mired in depression for the next 30 to 50 years. You'll live like paupers. Well, anyway, I get a letter from a subscriber, and it's in this issue coming up tomorrow. It's under the European section, letter from a fellow subscriber. His brother went to a wedding of very wealthy people, industrialists, and they told him that on September the 20th, or between the 20th and the end of the month, there's going to be a coup in Greece. Now, I mentioned that yesterday, and I did it specifically on Drew Raine's The Marine Disquisition, which I've been doing for over 5 years, and that program goes out. In fact, out of 333 blog talk programs, that's the number one program for a long time. And I've been doing it for over 5 years, but it's servicemen, retired and active, and others. And I no sooner put that information out, and we had an email from the detachment in Athens of the American Marines that are there. They said, "You're absolutely right. We've been on alert, and we're told the same thing, and it's coming down. We don't know when, and we hope it's bloodless." So I think if that happens, and I think really that's the best thing for them. I mean, they've been drained long enough. Maybe they don't have the devotion to work that the Germans have, but, you know, everybody should be allowed to live at their own pace. If everybody wanted German or American culture, they'd adopt it. And everybody doesn't like that culture, or those cultures. So anyway, if it happens, it'll spread. The next place probably will be, I would guess, Ireland or Spain. Both of them are ripe. Ireland is really in terrible shape. Their banks don't know what to do. They're out of money. They put in austerity about 8 or 10 months ago. It's dreadful that they're bearing up under it, but I think they only can take so much. Spain has a leader who is very naive, let's just put it that way. We have a lot of Spanish subscribers, and they describe to us the attitude of government there. So they're very vulnerable. The Portuguese aren't as much. I live there as well as I did in Spain. I've never lived in Ireland. I've just been there. Italy probably would be last. Italy's got a monstrous illegal alien problem. Most people never hear about it. And, you know, you go down the street in Rome, and, you know, 80% of the people you see are not Italians. It's a real problem. So anyway, I think that could happen. But if Greece leaves the euro, I think the other four, Ireland, Portugal, Italy, and Spain, will leave as well. And the euro will break up. Everybody will go back to their currencies. There could be, you might call it a super euro, but I don't think so. The German people don't want it. They never wanted the euro in the first place. What they wanted was their own Deutschmark. They didn't want to do that. I remember the polls at the time were 67% men, 71% women did not want it. In fact, 63% of Germans didn't even want to go into the European Union, which is very interesting, and most people don't know that. But anyway, that could eventually break up the European Union. And so it'll be interesting seeing how these things develop. And it also will affect the entire world, because collectively they're the largest market in the world, probably. And I would think that it would negatively, at the beginning, affect the euro, although the euro's come down from 150 to 119 to 133 to 126. And such events, if they do happen during September, I would think would send the euro down to retest the 119 level. And I also believe that it would help the dollar, but only fleetingly. America has serious, serious problems, and we all know that. And so that's the way I see that thing playing out. And it's nice to be ahead of the crowd. And I think we've got some really good information here.
Well, it certainly is good to be ahead of the crowd, and it will certainly be interesting to see how such a thing plays out, if indeed it does, because obviously that would be a game changer in so many different ways. And I'm always wary of times of type of revolutionary acts, because there's always the possibility that they can be co-opted, counteracted, or in some way counter-revolutionized. So it's always an interesting time to have the cards wiped off the table like that, but it's interesting to see how things get put back on the table. But your analysis is interesting as always, and you point out, of course, the other European nations that are teetering on the brink of collapse at the moment. Of course, Ireland up there, and you say you haven't lived in Ireland. I in fact did live in Ireland for 1 year, just at the end of the Celtic Tiger. Actually, really after the Celtic Tiger had just died, but prices were still up, and people still believed their homes had values and things. So, at that time, there was just not even the hint of any real disturbance or anything of like an uprising. And certainly we haven't seen the type of violent uprisings in Ireland or Spain that we have in Greece. So it certainly makes logical sense that Greece will be the first domino to fall. Do you see the same type of thing playing out in the other countries, or do you see the way that it happens in each country will be affected by the national character?
Well, that's a terrific question. I'll tell you why. Because the debts to the five nations, the bonds and loans held by banks in other countries, aggregate probably $2 trillion. If they walk away, the five of them, the rest of Europe's bankrupt. And so they'll all have to go down, because the people who are holding the paper, the bonds, the loans, I mean, they're up a tree. And nobody ever looks at that side of the equation. And that's why the Germans are so concern. I mean, they've done everything right. They had no housing boom. They had a great export boom. Everybody has done what they're supposed to do. They don't spend recklessly. They don't incur governmental debt on the scale others do. And it's very disappointing, but, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. Their elected representatives got them into the Union and then the Eurozone. And before that, they got royally screwed when they brought the two Germanys back together, giving East German marks the same status as West German marks, which was terrible. I mean, it should have been 10 or 20 to 1. And it was a tremendous drain on the Western German taxpayer. And that whole situation in Eastern Germany still isn't sorted out. And it probably won't be for a long time. And the reason that Britain and the United States push that agenda, and France as well, is that anything that can put Germany commercially behind the eight ball is good for the rest of them.
Right. Well, perhaps you can clear this up for me. I'm under the impression that the way that the debts are structured in the European Monetary Zone, some of the debtor nations are in fact in debt to each other, and they have reciprocal debts, so that large portions of the debts that are owing are actually owed to these debtor nations that in turn owe back to the other debtor nation in a way that's much too complicated for me to understand, but perhaps you can break down how that works.
Well, I think, quite frankly, it's pretty simple. You know, you buy our bonds, we'll buy your bonds. It's collective suicide or collective success. And the way it's worked out, it hasn't been a success. So, you know, when you have interconnectivity, if it's good, it's great. But if it isn't, it's disastrous. And that's what they got, a disaster. And so I don't know what the numbers are, but I know they're bad. And most of the paper is held by the more wealthy nations, such as Germany, France, Holland. Austria is buried in paper from Eastern Europe, mostly mortgages and Swiss francs. And, you know, Liechtenstein is a non-entity. And so I don't know the structure, but I just know it's bad. It's not good. And we don't have to know the structure. We just know that there's going to be trouble. And the United States and Great Britain are not going to escape, because they get the same problems. I mean, they both got horrendous debt, and unemployment is high, and it's going to go higher, even if they have, as we announced in this program 2 months ago, when I beat everybody to the punch and saying they're going to go to QE2, which is quantitative easing number two, another stimulus plan, because if they don't, the whole thing's going to collapse on them. And that's exactly what they did. And how did I find that out? I backed into it. You know, if you want to understand what they're going to do, you must understand the criminal mind. And if you can do that, then you know what they're going to do.
That's exactly right. And I think people should go back and listen to some of the earlier conversations that we've had if they haven't already, because you certainly did talk about the quantitative easing and how that could be used to move the whole thing along sideways and extend the inevitable collapse out another year or two, depending on how much they pump into the system. So again, just incredible information that we're getting from you time and again. So let's bring it back domestically to the United States and talk a little bit about some of those issues. As you mentioned, of course, the exact same debt pressures that are facing the European monetary zone countries are, of course, also facing the U.S. and Britain. And as always, the government's answer is to turn to taxation as a way of taxing themselves out of the problem, as if that's ever going to work, which I think everyone knows it won't, but that's probably not the point anyway. Tell us about some of the latest scams that are being proposed.
Well, about a year ago, I started intensively talking about behind the scenes, and this has been going on since 1995. This is nothing new. They knew they had problems then with Medicare and Medicaid because all the money came in with the general fund, and they used it. You might say they stole it, and they issued bonds for it, and the bonds were worthless. So they started to decide back in 95, how are we going to handle this thing? And there's two conclusions they came to, and I'm going to give you the first one. First of all, there are two pieces of legislation that are in the House and the Senate. They went in this week, so most people don't know about it. Jerome Corsi did talk about this in a peripheral manner. I have more information because I wrote my article later than he did. It was in last Saturday, then again on Wednesday, and I'm going to have more in tomorrow's issue as well. And the first thing is called the Debt-Free America Act, H.R. 4646, which would put a 1% sales tax on all transactions in the United States. I've been told by people in Washington that it probably will pass, and it'll be 3%. Within 3 years. Secondly, the next monstrosity is the Automatic IRA Act of 2010. I don't have the number on that one, which would decree a mandatory payroll tax on all workers of 3% to be used to purchase government retirement bonds. It's just another tax. Now, I've been told that that will be 15% within 3 years. Now, in addition to that, I had previously been talking about the plan that was in place since beginning of 1995 that they're going to bring forward next year after these two things are passed. And they're pretty sure they're going to get them passed. What they intend to do is issue a government-guaranteed annuity for your retirement accounts, and they will take them over. And you will be given credit for what they're worth and anything in addition that goes into them. The problem is the country's bankrupt, and you'll never get paid. Just like Social Security, it's bankrupt because they stole all the money. And so that's what's next on the agenda. They are going to pauperize every American. And the reason why is, and this is where I depart greatly from the mainstream, not the major media, but the newsletter writers. They won't talk about this. All of the things that you see happening financially and economically are not through incompetence, not through a cyclical form. They're caused because they were caused deliberately. And these people have done this over and over again for centuries. And it'll be accompanied by a war as well, so they can blame all the problems of the war. And they want Americans and Europeans in particular, and the rest of the world, mind you, on their knees financially and economically, because it's the only way they can get them to accept world government. And that's what this is all about. And this is what none of the other writers will tackle. Sure, Alex Jones tackles it, but he's an exception. And that's probably why he got me on this program every Friday. But the point is this. This is where this thing's headed. Just like the nationalization of the banking system, the production, heavy production of things like automobiles. The government wants to nationalize the housing industry and the housing producing industry. I wrote about this 8 years ago. Nobody's listening. I wrote about free trade, globalization, offshoring and outsourcing in 1967. Needless to say, more in the last 5 to 10 years. These plans were all put in place years ago. This is all planned. They allow every society to have its day, 50 or 200 or 300 years, and then game over. And they destroy them. And they move the source of power to a different place. And just look at history. It's all there. And that's what nobody wants to talk about. Well, that's where I get my information from. Sure, I got to back into it, but I obviously have come up with some pretty good conclusions. They might not be what you want to hear, but they're right. And that's important to you, because if you have wealth at all, what you can do is make moves so you can retain your wealth. And maybe can keep yourself from getting killed. I mean, these things get pretty nasty. I mean, it's easy to sit and talk about it, but the ramifications that we've seen over the years have been horrible. I mean, just the situation in Europe. I had a good friend who was a general in Germany during the war, and he wrote a book called Hitler at Versailles. And he described in some detail how the Second World War was brought about. He didn't understand, and neither did I at that time, this is back in the early 1980s, how extensively the British and American banking fraternity and how important they were to the financing of Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler. And as it turns out, that war was just a testing ground for fascism. And of course, we have Keynesianism in the economic sphere, which is nothing more nor less than corporatist fascism, allowing corporations to take control of governments and eventually a world government. Keynes was a member of the Webb's group, George Bernard Shaw, the Fabian Socialist Society, early on. And so they all come out of this socialist mindset, we'll call it. But that's where this whole thing is going. And people will look back and they'll say, gee, I wish he had been wrong. But I only deal with reality and what I believe is the truth. And needless to say, I'm not here to get rich, because where I'm going, I won't need money. In fact, I probably won't need anything. And so that's why I do what I do.
Well, you just raise so many points there that are absolutely so vital to understand, obviously touching on the fascists and the communists really being funded by the same sources and being used as just playing off against each other as a way of creating war. And war is, of course, always a destabilizing event that can be used to perpetuate the system and to further enslave the domestic population. And so that's always something to keep in mind. And as you point out, as the economy collapses, there will be a war, whether staged, provocateur, or whatever, in order to blame the collapse on. You also talk about just so many different facets of how this is not incompetence by any means, but a well-crafted plan, because something that most people don't understand or don't want to understand is that the rich and well-connected industrialists and billionaires of one country have nothing in common with the other people in their country. They have no allegiance to any one country. They only have allegiance to each other in their bloodlines. So certainly there's a... There's absolutely no reason for them to have any particular love for America or Britain or any particular country, and that's why countries can be played with like they're toys. And just going back to the Automatic IRA Act 2010, which you talked about earlier, mandatory payroll tax for government retirement bonds. I'm no constitutional expert, but it strikes me that that doesn't exactly adhere to constitutional principles.
As far as they're concerned, the Constitution no longer exists, and the court system is controlled by them. I mean, look who they just appointed, someone who's never been to court. I mean, that's unbelievable, on the Supreme Court of the United States. And why was she appointed? Because she was the one who set up all the legal roadblocks so that the world couldn't find out for sure that the President of the United States is an illegal alien. And, of course, part of the reason she was appointed is that she's a hardcore lesbian. And that always helps today because they like to have this we're not against lesbian things.
Right, Elena Kagan, of course. And the earlier appointment was Sonia Sotomayor, who just happens to be a member of the Belizean Grove, which is the sister organization to the Bohemian Grove, which is perhaps a little bit more famous for being referred to by Richard Nixon as the, quote, faggotiest goddamn place in the world, end quote. So, yeah, it's there is certainly an agenda behind a lot of these different things that are going on. So it's important for people to look into the connections behind these people, and they're not being placed there by accident. Absolutely, another important point. Well, let's move back a little bit, and let's look at anything else that you think is important that's playing out either in the immediate future in the U.S. or maybe in Europe or anywhere else that you think people need to know about right now.
Well, I think a very important event happened yesterday, and that was Mr. Bernanke was testifying before Congress, and he admitted that he was less than forthcoming. That's another way, a euphemism, if you may, of saying I lied at the last hearing that they had on Lehman Brothers and the takeover and so on. And it just goes to show you, now, he did that under oath both times. So he should be charged with lying under an oath. And I don't know what the penalty for that is, but he should be charged. And, of course, nobody's speaking up and saying, let's charge this man because he broke the law. And I don't know whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony or a criminal act, but I know it's not right. And so with that said, I think that's an important event because it shows you the denigration of the culture in America, where it's perfectly acceptable politically and financially, socially, to be a liar. And I think it reflects the attitude of these people we just talked about who run everything, that don't care about the Constitution, the court system, or anything else. They do what they want to do. They do what they want to do. And if they get caught, well, we just had Goldman Sachs get caught. They stole $5 billion. The SEC went after them, so it was a civil matter. They paid a $500 million fine. Nice work if you can get it. They got away with $4.5 billion. Pretty good. Why? Because they're members of the Illuminati. 7 or 8 months ago, we had Warren Buffett's firm, Berkshire Hathaway. They committed accounting fraud of $300 million. They paid a $100 million fine and got to keep $200 million for being crooks. Nice work if you can get it. None of them ever go to jail. I think out of the 700 CEOs who lied and reset their options, one went to jail because he wasn't connected, and he wouldn't cooperate with them. With them being the SEC. So they sent it to the Justice Department, and the Justice Department gave them 2 years or something like that. But this is the way it is in America today. You have no rights. You know, God forbid you should have to go to court. I mean, your chances are slim and none, and your chances in civil court are far worse than they are in criminal court. Ask any attorney, he'll tell you that. So anyway, I thought that was a very important event. And the fact that they're starting to begin quantitative easing. They're not going to tell you when they're doing it because they lie about everything. And last year, the Fed bought about 80% of the Treasury paper that was issued, but they're not going to admit to that. You got to back into it. Of course, the CPI, the PPI, and the employment figures are all bogus, and that goes along with the whole syndrome of lying. And for the last 16 months, banks have cut back lending about 25 to 30% to small and medium-sized businesses, which create 70% of the jobs. And in June, unbeknownst to me, I found this out about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the banks were starting to lend again. But you can't get a loan if you haven't made money for 2 years in a row, even if you've got $5 billion in assets. They won't even take the assets as collateral. They don't want them. You've got to be an ongoing firm that's making money and will give you a loan. So they went out to make these loans, and nobody wants them. Now, what is that called? It's called a liquidity trap. They're sitting on a pile of money, and even if they wanted to put it into the economy to get it going, to create jobs, they can't do it because the people in the companies are saying, look, we get 21.5% unemployment. That's a real number. We don't think the economy is going to be robust. So why should we hire people, and why should we expand? And even more onerous until the end of the year is the end of the Bush tax cuts. And the president says, we're going to let them collapse. We don't want them. We need that money, that 15% we're going to hang on you after the first of the year. So the people who are running the company are saying, hey, in the face of that, we can't make any money. So if we can't make any money, we don't want any loans. Are they in a pickle? They're in a cage and they can't get out.
Absolutely. Well, Bob Chapman, there is an old adage that people get the government they deserve. And I always resist employing that because I think it's counterproductive to blame the victims for the things that their oppressors are doing to them. But at a certain point, you have to wonder if there's any grievance that the people just generally aren't willing to put up with or aren't willing to look the other way. And you point that out, for example, when government officials get up and lie to the public, straight flat out lie, and no one seems to get upset, no one does anything about it. It does show some sort of degradation of the culture and just a lack of the basic spirit that is needed to in order to protect the crown jewel of liberty. Bob Chapman, what do you think about what the people will not be willing to accept? Is there any line that the government can cross that people will finally be able to say enough is enough?
As far as the American people are concerned, and any other group of people, they're just like an army. They have to have a place to be housed, whether it's a tent or a house. They have to have food and water, and they have to have medical care, and they have to have something to do because people just don't like standing around doing nothing. People, it's inherent in them to want to work. And so Americans and others, they will reach a point where unemployment, the loss of your home, your vehicles, everything that you own is gone. And that's when it'll happen, when there's no more food in the belly. And then people will do anything. And that's why the president is desperately, through the UN, now trying to take everybody's small arms away from them. And I think he's going to have a hard time. And if he tries it, he may very well have a revolution on his hands. And the military will not side with them. I've talked to enough military people. I know they're not going to stand by and let that happen. Believe me. And so these people behind the scenes who think they're going to get away with all this and suppress the American people or any other group of people, they're sadly mistaken. The game's over for them. They just don't know it yet. And when it is over and we start to get things back together again, although the solution may not have come through and made the world economy or the people in America somewhat whole again, These people are all going to get tried. And all these assets that they've stolen are going to go to the government, and they're going to be put in jail. And the people who have committed treason, the Brzezinskis and the Henry Kissingers and many, many, many others who haven't died yet, will be hung. And we have every intention of doing it. Legally.
Of course, after a due process of law and a trial by a jury of their peers, that's exactly, I think, the way that this is most likely to play out. Because, as you say, when people have no food in their bellies, that's when action happens, and that's why the excuse me, that's why the work that you and so many others are doing right now in spreading awareness and information about what's really going on and who's really to blame is absolutely so vital, because obviously at the time when people are just scrambling to find a way to feed themselves and keep their families alive, they're not going to be in the right state of mind to be able to truly process what's happening. So we have to have this inculcated into people so that there's absolutely no doubt in their minds about what's happening or who's behind it, so they know where to direct their anger. And that's such an important part of the puzzle, and something that you're doing such a great job with over at the International Forecaster. And just before we wrap up, I think I'd really like to touch on the 9th anniversary of 9/11, which is just coming up next week. I have a big episode on that coming up later on this weekend, and I'd love to get your thoughts on what the significance of the 9th anniversary is, and your thoughts on 9/11 in general.
Well, I think the significance is that the people who behind the scenes who caused this, who planned it, and executed it, it just shows you in a very, very close sense that they have absolutely no care for human life. And that's been shown up in every war. Hundreds of millions of people get killed. They could care less. In fact, they think 60-80% of the people shouldn't be on the face of the earth because they're useless eaters. Well, that's their idea of controlling society. But 9/11 was planned and executed. It wasn't done by a bunch of crazy Muslims, even though they had Muslims working on the CIA payroll and other payrolls as well. And it just shows you the lengths that they will go to get what they want. A good example was this BP oil spill, and behind the whole thing, and it was deliberate, it was a false flag operation, and I said from the very beginning that it was. They wanted carbon taxes and cap and trade passed. They lost. I mean, BP is worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's controlled by the Queen of England, the Queen of Holland, and their interests are controlled by JP Morgan Chase. And they decided that was what they were going to do, because that's what they needed. And so they did what they wanted to do, and that's why they did 9/11. They had to get America involved in a war, and they did. I predicted it 2 years before it happened. I predicted 9/11 the November before. I didn't know what the event was going to be, but I knew there was going to be an event, a false flag event. And that's what it was. And I don't have all the details because I'm not a fundi on that. All I know is what I know. I saw what they did. You know, I worked with explosives. I was in the military. I know how that works. They would have had to wire that place for a month before to make it come down the way that it did. When I saw that, I knew it was a laydown.
Now, there's many people who talk about the financial aspects of 9/11, and there are so many different aspects. Of course, not only the insider trading, which is rather famous, but also the lesser known $2.3 trillion that was announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers on the day before 9/11 by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. And the even lesser known fact that one of the few offices that were actually hit in the Pentagon on 9/11 was the budget analyst office that was investigating the missing trillions. So that's, I think, an important aspect of that. Of course, there are so many other financial aspects to 9/11, and really, there are many that speculate that it was a last-ditch attempt to prop up and ensure the continued hegemony of the petrodollar and enforcement of American imperial aggression around the world. What's your take on the financial importance of 9/11?
all of those things, plus the gold that was in there, where did it go? Who got it? The offices of the Central Intelligence Agency were in that building, as were other very, very important offices that all of the evidence that they had was destroyed. And again, I'm not an expert on us by a long shot. And so I'm really, actually, other than my own thoughts, I'm really not qualified to discuss it, actually. I can't know everything, and I don't.
You can't know everything, but you do know an awful lot, and it's so much information is packed into each letter of the International Forecaster newsletter. It's really amazing. Tell people a little bit about the newsletter and how they can get a copy.
Well, the forecast is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually runs around 40 pages each time by email. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FOrecaster.com. Or you can go to www.intforecaster.com. Intforecaster.com. We answer all questions, so if you want to email us, that address is Bob. B-O-B at intforecaster.com, Bob at intforecaster.com, or you can call toll-free 877-479-8178, that's 877-479-8178, and if you call that number, they have a special offering, a deal there, which I think is fantastic, and you can get a free one-year subscription, so take a look at it, and if it appeals to you, do it. If it doesn't, don't. Otherwise, you can get a free copy anyway.
Exactly right, and anyone who doesn't at least try out the free copy doesn't know what they're missing, quite literally. Well, Bob Chapman, an extremely fascinating conversation, as always, with new information, and that's why I always look forward to our conversation, and we'll be looking forward to our next conversation next month, where who knows, we might be discussing the beginning of the collapse of the European Union. So we'll see what happens, what plays out with Greece at the end of this month. But thank you again for keeping us up to date, and I look forward to talking with you next time.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure, and thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.